25% of his dropbacks. 25%. And you had him throwing the ball 30 to 50 times in multiple games? That's just way too much. Now, is Nick Mullins the next Jeff Garcia? No, I'm not saying that's what he is. But he at least gets this team in the offense quicker. He's quicker to anticipate where the rush is coming from. He's made some really nice audibles and checks at the line that have been subtle nuances that I've been looking at when I've watched the game back. He hasn't taken any sacks. He's quick to get rid of the ball. But here's where his deficiencies are. He has absolutely no arm strength. And throwing the ball outside the numbers has been very difficult for him. He has been slow to read that. He's getting rid of the ball late. And when you get rid of the ball late outside the numbers, 9 times out of 10, veteran DBs are going to jump on that ball and pick it.
I don't have to tell you, but that is still better than holding onto the ball for too long.
I would rather you take a shot.
Because especially with a team that is putting up points at the slow clip that the Niners are right now, when you get yourself into the red zone, you get yourself into those positions, and you take a 6-7 yard sack that CJ is so prone to doing and knocking them out of range or making third downs impossible, I will take Nick chucking it out there, taking a chance every single time.
I totally agree with that. And then also when you have a lack of dynamic playmakers on the outside from the wide receiver position, it forces your team to go short on everything. And so 3rd and 15, 3rd and 18, 3rd and 20 is almost impossible. I mean, for most offenses, it's impossible. But specifically for this offense, it feels like a lost season. How many times have they taken a crucial sack to drive them out of field goal range? I feel like it's happened every single half of football that CJ Beathard has played. And he has very ugly, ugly turnovers. Running around in the pocket, he goes to throw, ball slips out of his hands. Like, there's an optics to how ugly it looks.
Chilton Auto Body text line, just really quick, going back to what you were saying before, because I personally think your priorities are a little bit mismatched. I think the secondary should be prioritized above the D-line, because as much credit as we give Aaron Donald, and well, we should, incredible player, he does have Marcus Peters in the secondary. He does have people giving him the time that he needs to get to the quarterback, which I think DeForest would benefit from greatly.
Yes.
And we have a text on the text line. I would love to somehow get Collins from New York.
See,
don't know about the feasibility, but I love Landon Collins.
Me too.
Love
me too.
Him.
Me too. And he's not a guy who's great in pass coverage, but he thumps and he's rangy and athletic, and I like him. Again, those are the kind of players I want. Guys that maybe the New York Giants are going to move off, who's been in the league for a couple of years, proven Alabama track record. I like him. I like him a lot. You know what he reminds me of? He's not as good as this player. I'm not saying. But he reminds me of the Miami safety who passed away. Do you guys know where I'm going with this one?
Sean Taylor, RIP.
That's what he looks like. And I think he needs to be coached up. I think he needs the right scheme. And you know what? I think he'd be better in a 3-4 as well. I think him in the deep two, I like him in that coverage better than his
zone. This is back to what Dante Whitner has been saying for a couple of weeks now about how Solomon himself would be better in the 3-4. It seems like the league in general is going to the 3-4. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of benefits left in staying in this rigidity of the 4-3. So
I agree.
Is this just the scheme that we got right now? We move out Robert, we bring somebody else in?
So here, I have a theory on this. We got Connor Letourneau at the top of the hour. He's going to talk Warriors with us. And then John Dickinson and Kerry Keating, the coach, are going to come in and do Warriors pregame at 2:30 to get you ready for this San Antonio game. But back to the 49ers. I have a theory about defenses. When you look at the offenses around the league, do any offenses come and go, we are just a spread offense. We are just a power offense. No, there's multiplicity. There's diversity. Depending on the scheme, the matchup, the week, depending on who's available, depending on down and distance, we are going to run a variation of formations. Well, why would I be so pigeonholed to one defensive scheme every single week inside and out? It drives me bonkers. I need more multiplicity with my defense. And the area that I'm looking at, and this is why I want to spend money on veterans in the secondary, in the linebacker situation, is because I want guys that have played in lots of different schemes so I can run different schemes. When you have rookies, you limit the playbook, right? When I have veterans on the defensive side, I can run more variations. I can run more things. And so I want to see this defense, it's not Robert Saleh's fault per se. But I just need to move off him so I can get somebody in here who can run various schemes depending on down and distance, who we're playing, who's healthy that week. I mean, every single week, it's like, everybody's hurt, and we got to run this one specific scheme, and because we don't have outside rushers, it's just not going to work. That's not good enough.
And I promise, don't adjust that dial, folks. This is 95.7 The Game, Bay Area. This is not an L.A. Rams fan station, but this is what makes Sean McVay so dangerous is that he can run circles around all these coordinators in the league with the variousness of his looks.
Absolutely.
And that has to translate to both sides of the ball. I'm not saying that you can go out and find a Sean McVay for your defense, but you have to find somebody who can at least flip the coverages a little bit from down to down. Something.
I agree with that. And there's a reason guys like Dick LeBeau are timeless. Vic Fangio. You know, one of the hidden elements of why Shanahan's couldn't hire Vic Fangio was that Jed York totally screwed over Vic Fangio. I think Vic wanted a head coaching job. I don't think he was head coaching material. But the way it went down, the Harbaugh situation, his allegiance to Jim Harbaugh, you couldn't bring Vic Fangio back after what had happened. And look at that Bears defense. Now, granted, the Bears defense has Floyd. They have Khalil Mack. They've got a lot of stud playmakers. There's no doubt about it. But I love that defense. And Vic knows what he's doing. And he maximizes his players' potential. I brought this up. I'll bring it up again. They're very different players, but they play a similar position. Cassius Marsh and Justin Smith. Now, Justin Smith, traditional 3-end stuffer. You know, he's not going to drop into coverage ever. Cassius Marsh is not some versatile piece who can cover in space like Von Miller. Even Von Miller doesn't cover in space, but can do, you know, set the edge in the run game, can get around, bend around a left tackle, this and that. But he's a decent run stuffer, and he's decent at times of getting to the quarterback. Him in space is a no-go. And yet they had him covering Saquon Barkley on the most important drive of the game. And I'm like, what are we doing? What are we doing? It drives me bonkers. Now, offensively, this we don't have playmakers. We have a lack of playmakers. Then draft them. Like, our number one playmaker right now is a fifth-round draft pick who's an absolute stud. I think he's going to be an all-pro this year. He should be the lone 49er all-pro. It'll probably be him and Sherman. But maybe even McGlinchey. But George Kittle is an absolute stud. I brought up the numbers, and now everyone's talking about it now. But Dave Parks was a tight end in the 1960s. 1965 was probably his best season for the 49ers. 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns, 80 catches. Kittle could eclipse all of those numbers but the touchdowns. And I think that's where I go back to Shanahan. They've had a lot of trips in the red zone, and they just can't punch it in. And they can't find George Kittle. It's killing me. It's absolutely killing me. And so I want to see this team get a dynamic wide receiver in the draft. And sadly, if you look at the draft options at wide receiver, there's not a lot of them. There's the kid from Arizona State, and that's about it.
Well, take you back to the beginning of the season when there was so much promise, and we had the opening game against the Vikings, and a couple of those passes didn't get completed in the end zone. And this is what you were talking about, I remember. Don't have a jump ball threat in the end zone. Don't have somebody with the frame and the range to pull these kinds of things in. Well, how big is George Kittle?
He's a monster.
You're not going to tell me on a couple of these plays, you're not just going to throw a little bit of a back end zone route or something?
Well, I'd like
especially with how the rules are favoring receivers these days. Let him box out.
I agree,
let him go up. I never see that. I never see that.
And I'd like to see him split out wide as a wide receiver like Jimmy Graham, like Gronk is, where he's isolated. You have a nice tight formation. You split out Kittle wide. Let him go one-on-one with a six-foot DB. Throw it up to him. Like, let's see it. Utilize this guy. And that goes back to the spacing comment by Grant Cohn, which I think he makes a great comment about, is that Shanahan's entire offense is designed to create spacing and misdirection. And yet when they get into a confined space, you're limited as to how much you can stretch out the defense. And I'd like to see him get more creative in the red zone. And this thing where like, oh, well, they just don't have playmakers, so we can't analyze anything. Like, nah, that's not fair. Like, that's just not fair. That's not a good enough excuse for me. You know, who would have thought any of the New England Patriot players over the last 15 years, oh, was Julian Edelman some elite playmaker coming out of college?
James White, top five draft pick. What a game-breaking running back.
And then the snapback argument is, oh, well, they got Tom Brady, so, you know, you can just throw all that out the window. There's no doubt. But other teams are still making guys look really good in the red zone. Robert Woods. Robert Woods is nothing special, but he's really solid in that offense and makes plays. And they use him on the jet sweep, him and Brandon Cooks, over and over and over and over again. And those guys have very specific skill sets that McVay uses brilliantly. And here's the other thing. The guy who's really, and it's not sabotage isn't the word, but him being out really ruined the offense moving forward. And it frustrated me that we put so many eggs in the basket. It's Marquise Goodwin. Him going down week one, first half, really set this offense back. And that goes back to Shanahan. I feel like he put way too much into this Jerick McKinnon is going to be our everything. Like, he's Todd Gurley. He is not. He's been in the league 5 years. He's never eclipsed 900 total yards from scrimmage. He's not that player. And yet you put all the eggs in the Jerick McKinnon and Goodwin basket, and that's just not good enough for me. I need more playmakers, and I need to draft them. On the other side, let's continue this 49er conversation. We'll continue to survey what the Raiders are doing in this NFL Sunday. Come back. Top of the hour, we got Connor Letourneau, and then Warriors wrap at 2:30. John Dickinson and Kerry Keating on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Butcher Shop on 95.7 The Game. Here's Joe Shasky.
Yes, yes, yes. This is the Butcher Shop. I am Joe Shasky. Welcome on a Sunday. Football Sunday. We also got the Warriors coming up. JD and Kerry Keating are going to take you all the way up to the tip starting at 2:30. Warrior game starts at 4. San Antonio Spurs, big matchup. And we got Connor Letourneau at the top of the hour, who covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. But right now, let's continue this 49er conversation because the texts are flowing in on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795.
Hey, babe. Just one sec. Just wanted to touch on from you earlier. RIP to our good buddy Alex Smith, who has officially been reported to have a broken tibia and fibula off that hit.
Oof.
And he will go into surgery immediately.
Oh, I hope he's okay. That's not good. That means it's a severe injury. Oh, man, that's not good. That is not good. And what's going on with the Raider game right now, Gabe? Is it still tied 7-7?
Nope. The good old Washington Redskins. Or, sorry, my bad. I was just
what
in the
game you watching, man?
I was in the Redskins mode because of Alex Smith and the red uniforms. The Arizona Cardinals broke out a, I believe, 63-yard screen pass for a touchdown. It is now 14-7 Arizona.
David Johnson is back. 888-957-9570. Now, let's get back to the 49ers because I'm very intrigued by the 49ers, even though the record doesn't speak it. I know they've had a really, really difficult time this year. Injuries. Oh, injuries. But I do think there's some things that you can dissect from this. Just this year. And I think there's some things that you can look forward to in the second half. One of them being, can this team, if they get a lead, close a game out? Can you close a game out? And I'm very worried about the run game when it comes to closing games out because I love Matt Breida. I really like him as a first three quarters type of a running back. He's a guy who can gash you. He can jump cut. He can show straight great burst, great vision. There's really not a specific comp, but I see a lot of elements, and I'm not saying this is who he is, but I'm just saying when I see 22 and I see the vision and the patience behind the blocks, I see a lot of elements of what Emmett Smith did. And I know people are going to like go bonkers when I say that, but Emmett wasn't the biggest guy, but he had really good patience and he knew how to set up blocks, not just at the first level, but at the second level. And he was really good at not taking huge shots.
Well, all due respect to Grant Cohn, who had an incredible segment. It was great having him on. Love Grant. The scat back thing, I thought the comment was a little bit dismissive because, yeah, Breida is not the most, all around back that you're ever going to have. But the man runs harder than just about anybody that I've ever seen. He crushes those holes. He does not give up. He's just relentless when he's running out there.
I agree with that, but the way the NFL is structured right now, it's a two-back system. Todd Gurley is an absolute monster, but he's so much bigger than Matt Breida. He can take a punishment, and he's so much stronger. He gets to the outside. His burst, he's great in the run game, in the pass game. To me, for my money, Todd Gurley's the NFL MVP. That's just me. That's just for me. And I could see arguments for other players, Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees. Like I'm here for all of those discussions. But I've watched Todd Gurley carry that Rams team offensively. And Jared Goff's taken a huge step forward. But I think part of his huge step forward is because the run game is so effective, it allows him so much time in the pocket because you have to account for where Todd Gurley is on every play. Now back to Breida. I would like to see them find that complimentary big back. Alfred Morris is just too slow. He doesn't have the burst. He doesn't fit the cut system anymore. He looked really good in preseason against four stringers, but he's looked really slow and heavy, and he just doesn't have the burst. And when he comes into the game, teams know they are only going to do one of two things, run a play action or hand the ball off to Alfred Morris. They're not going to do anything super creative. They're not going to do anything super elaborate. And I think it's limited them in what they can run. I look at someone like the Los Angeles Chargers, and they've got Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. I look at someone like the Tennessee Titans, and they've got the kid who was a Patriot, whose name's evading me right now,
Deion Lewis.
Yeah, Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry. Thunder and lightning. I'm a believer in you can never have enough running backs, even if you've got a guy like Todd Gurley.
Well, maybe not complimentary, but the Chilton Autobody text line is exploding with a thought that I know you've had, so let's just open it. Le'Veon Bell.
I have no problem going after Le'Veon Bell. And I hear people, how can you trust him? How can you pay a running back? Dude, we sat on $40 million in cap space this year. We sat on $40 million in cap space. The year prior, we sat on $60 million in cap space. Spend the money. Spend the money. He's an absolute star. He's a stud. He's a physical freak that has to be accounted for. And you pair him up with Matt Breida in the backfield at the same time. That gives us so many more options to run, especially in the red zone. And he can help you in the pass game so tremendously. He was the leading pass catcher in the NFL from the running back position just a year ago. He's an absolute stud. Yes. Yes, he's one, you know, joint away from being suspended again. Yes, he quit on his team. All of those things are true. He wanted to get paid. But sometimes being in a new situation really helps. I look at someone like New Orleans, and as brilliant as Drew Brees is, they've got a phenomenal running back in Alvin Kamara. And even Mark Ingram is not too shabby. He'd be starting on a lot of teams in the league. And so I see teams like that utilize the multiple back system. And I go, the Niners need that. But here's the element that all of these teams seem to have. Even Tennessee, as limited as they are in the pass game, they got Corey Davis. Corey Davis makes plays. He's on pace for 80 touches. 80 touches and 10 touchdowns and 1,300 yards. Michael Thomas. I mean, I think everyone knows who Michael Thomas is now, but if you've been following fantasy football for the last 3 years, he's been Julio Jones 2.0. Absolute beast. I look at Atlanta, for example. They've got Julio, and that enables them to run their back system, even though Freeman has been hurt pretty much all year. Coleman's been eaten. He's been eaten, as the kids like to say. So I do want to see the 49ers go after Le'Veon Bell. And again, if the guy quits on you or whatever, okay, overpay for a big, massive, what essentially amounts to a two-year deal, and move off him. It doesn't mean that you got to, like, you know, oh, we're going to get rid of everyone and just go with Le'Veon Bell.
I just don't get the argument keeps coming up. And obviously, if you can have a roster of guys on rookie contracts who perform the way that the wage scale is set up right now, awesome. But at a certain point, you got to spend it.
Who's won the Super Bowl the last few years?
It's just...
Is it teams loaded with rookies or teams loaded with vets?
Exactly.
Look at Philly. Philly was loaded with vets.
And they went aggressive in the offseason, just like you... Like, before the season, and even the year before especially, nobody was looking at Philly as a deep playoff team, let alone a Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
But they didn't sit around. They went out and they got some people who could come in and make differences for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to strike while the iron is hot. And when you have Jimmy Garoppolo in the fold, whether you think he's a top 15 quarterback or a bust or not... Like, how can you even make that evaluation when he doesn't have enough playmakers around him? I need guys around him. All right? Now, if you're rebuilding like the Raiders are, it makes sense to just get rid of everyone and sink the ship and reset it and go back to Vegas. I get that. But the 49ers aren't in that position. They need to start building this up. I'm sick and tired of losing. Is anyone else? 5 straight years of losing. And, like, not just losing, losing miserably with no hope. And that's one of the things that, like, I want to see more hope. And one of the things that Jimmy brought to this team is a ton of hope. And the text line, the Chilton Autobody text line, keeps saying it. Pay him. Pay him. Pay this guy. You got to pay to play. I agree. I totally agree. You need to spend some money. And I get it. Le'Veon Bell comes with risk. He comes with tremendous risk. But that's a risk I'm willing to roll the dice on, me personally. Now, we got Connor Letourneau is going to join us at the top of the hour. We're going to talk Warriors. I know some people are fatigued on the Warriors situation, but I think it's an interesting one. I mean, we're watching the greatest run in Bay Area history. The greatest run in Bay Area history, more so than the 70s A's, more so than the 80s and 90s 49ers. They've been to the championship, what would be series, 4 straight years. They've been playing basketball longer and deeper into the year, the calendar, than any other organization. And even the Spurs, for as great as their run was, they never won back-to-back. And what the Warriors are doing is very, very, very rare. And this isn't the 1960s Celtics where only 6 teams were in the league. And, you know, I think Bill Russell played with 75 different Hall of Famers at one time. I mean, it's like, come on. What they're doing is extremely rare and special. And I think that's why the media, and myself included, and the fans are losing their mind, because we know how precious this is and we know how quickly things can turn for an organization. Look at the 49ers a few years ago. Oh, they're going to be in the Super Bowl every year. Look at the San Francisco Giants. Oh, 3 in 5 years. 61 games under 500 over the last 2 years. And we have no idea. We have no idea if they're ever going to get back to that. The Chilton Auto Body text line is asking, what station is the Raiders game on? Is that
KCBS?
KCBS.
And what's 740.
740. Go to 740 for the Raiders game.
Quick silver and black update, actually. Josh Rosen just had a pass deflected and intercepted by the Oakland Raiders. It is now their ball, still score 14-7.
Have we seen Chris Townsend on the sideline? I need that update.
Have not yet laid eyes on the venerable Chris Townsend.
So I'll tell you a funny story.
I know
story.
He's there. I just haven't seen him.
Funny story. I'm watching the Raider game. I've been basically out every Sunday, every week, and I'm watching the Raider game. My wife's not met Chris. You know, and Chris and I do a lot of shows at night together. And Johnny Townsend, the punter, does a fake punt. She goes, is that the guy you work with? I go, no, Johnny Townsend. That's not Chris Townsend, hon. I love you. He's fast. That's what you said.
That was when Townie's been, you know, doing his admirable job on the Raiders this year, everything. He has bemoaned a little bit the lackluster punting ability of Johnny Townsend, because he's always said, yeah, there's a guy on the Raiders with Townsend. I'd love to get a Townsend jersey. But it was looking like he might not make it through the year. So now I think this fake punt breathed some new life into Chris,
he
honestly.
He ran the fastest 40 time measured by the analytics. I guess you know how fast he's going, 22 miles an hour. Fastest player he tied for in the NFL. So that's, and also, if you Google Johnny Townsend and his girlfriend situation, he's winning off the field, boys. He is winning off the field. Now, let's talk a little Warriors. We're going to have Connor Letourneau join us here in about 3 minutes. Last night was a very interesting game for the Warriors. We obsessed over the final 2 minutes, and rightfully so, about the half-court execution. I felt like, for the most part, they got decent shots. I liked all of the shots. Shots just didn't fall. I know that's kind of a scapegoat argument sometimes people will say, but there's a lot of positives from last night. Quinn Cook getting his confidence back, absolutely massive. He needs to get his shot to be falling and for him to be confident, because if he's not taking that shot, he's not a very impactful player. He needs to be an offensive threat. He's not very good defensively, so he needs to offset that with some offense. And then obviously Jonas Jerebko has been so much better than I gave him credit for coming into the season. I mean, really athletic, excellent rebounder, good passer, soft hands, good feel for the game. How did the rest of the league miss on him? How did they not realize? Now, I know he looks better on our team, and a lot of, you know, niche players tend to look better. We're surrounded by stars, but I really like Jonas Jerebko's game. So we got him. Let's go to Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, how you doing, buddy? How's Texas treating you?
It's good. It's good. A little chilly, but I'm hanging in there.
Okay, awesome. What did you make of the final 2 minutes of that game last night? Did you have any issues with, you know, maybe Kerr calling a timeout this time, or offensive execution in the half court? Maybe, you know, just I felt like shots just didn't fall. Did you see it a different way?
No, I felt the exact same way. I actually thought that what they ran worked. I mean, both Durant and Klay Thompson got open when they needed to. It's just that shots didn't go down, and, you know, that happens. If you're gonna dissect that loss, you should point to things beyond those final 2 minutes, because I thought they did what they needed to do. But, you know, sometimes shots just don't fall.
Yeah, I agree with that. Connor Letourneau, the San Francisco Chronicle, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. We got the pregame coverage starting at 2:30 with John Dickinson and Kerry Keaton, and then tip-off's going to be at 4 o'clock tonight. You know, I was really impressed with Damian Lee. Here's a guy that I saw him in flashes, and I kind of, I'm not going to be, I made fun of him. You know, the headband, the Karate Kid look, and he played really good last night. I think he had a career high in points and stroking the three, really active defensively. Are they going to utilize him a little more, especially with McKinney out tonight?
Yeah, I definitely expect him to play meaningful minutes again. He's a guy who can really shoot the ball, and that's really what they need right now. With Steph out, with McKinney out, with Draymond out, they have to play a different sort of brand of basketball. And so, you know, I don't think Steve is afraid to throw him out there. Obviously, he played really well last night, 11 first half points, hit some big threes. He's been great in Santa Cruz this season. In limited time with Atlanta when he was with them toward the end of last season. He actually looked really nice, averaged over 10 points per game for them. And so that's why he commanded the two-way deal with the Warriors. I think he's an NBA-level guy who just needs an opportunity. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Quinn Cook in that way.
Oh, since you brought up Quinn Cook, Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle, covering the Warriors. He'll be at the game, 4 o'clock tip-off here on 95.7 The Game, the flagship of the Warriors. I thought Quinn Cook took a huge step forward yesterday with the confidence. I mean, he was on fire, and he didn't play in the final minutes. Was there any reasoning why? Did Steve Kerr elaborate on why Quinn Cook maybe didn't get into the rotation in the final couple minutes?
No, he didn't. You know, I'm guessing that it was because he was happy with the shooters he had on the floor. Obviously, Quinn Cook is largely going to be on the floor because they need, you know, another guy to spread the floor, especially with Steph out. I think Steve was probably happy with what he had going with Clay and KD there. But no, he didn't get into detail explicitly about it.
Okay. We got Connor Letourneau, the San Francisco Chronicle, covers the Warriors here. Before we get to, you know, Draymond, Steph, the KD situation, and in tonight's game, I'm curious about the Dallas Mavericks. We saw an old friend, Harrison Barnes, played pretty good defense on Durant in the final minute last night. But the guy I was impressed with was Luka Doncic. And I don't even know if I'm saying his name properly, but my goodness, he's thick. He can move. Great feel for the game. He sees the court. He can put the ball on the ground and make plays for people. He's got a nice touch. Can rebound. I mean, he looks like an absolute superstar, does he not?
No, he's phenomenal. I mean, the guy was EuroLeague MVP as a 19-year-old. That's absolutely unbelievable. If you look at a lot of lottery picks coming out of Europe, a lot of those guys, the year before they're drafted to the NBA, are averaging around 6, 7, 8 points per game in the EuroLeague at best. This guy was averaging well into the teens, was a go-to guy on his team. So he is a prodigy in a lot of ways, and I have told a lot of people that if I was the Suns in June, I would have taken him number one overall. The fact that he split as much as he did, I thought was crazy. But no, the Mavericks have a guy they can really build around in him. To me, he's kind of a young Manu Ginobili in a lot of ways. He's very heady. He's very smart. He knows how to play. He's great.
That's a really good comparison. I like that one. I might steal that one. Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle, covers the Warriors here on 95.7 The Game. You know, Sean Livingston has gotten back into the rotation after being out for quite some time. How's he feeling? And are they going to extend him tonight? Because I know they've been kind of watching him and Iguodala's minutes on back-to-backs. But because of all the DMPs and guys being out, do you expect him to get more run again tonight?
Yeah, he'll definitely play tonight. This might have been a situation if they weren't so banged up where he would have gotten a rest night tonight. But with how depleted they are, they just need the body. So he'll play meaningful minutes tonight. I think Quinn Cook will get as much, if not more, playing time, just given the fact that it is, you know, it is a back-to-back, the back end of a back-to-back. But, you know, he'll definitely be out there.
Okay, interesting. Connor Letourneau, the San Francisco Chronicle. Let's get to Steph Curry, because I think everybody in Warrior Land is like, oh, when Steph Curry comes back, everything will be all right. He's the great, you know, the elixir that kind of makes everything better. What is his status right now? And if this were the playoffs, do you think they would push it and make him play, or would he be more willing to play right now? Or is this something that they're going to have to monitor over the entire year? And even if he does come back, there could be serious re-aggravation down the line.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything they're overly concerned about. I do think if it was the playoffs, he would probably be playing right now. But they're being very careful, as they should be. It is still November. There's still 5 months until the games that really matter. And this is an injury that Steph has never had before. You know, he said last night, I can tell you everything about the ankle. I can tell you everything about coming back from an ankle injury. But as far as a groin injury, this is new. And groin injuries are interesting because, you know, a lot of times you can't really tell much from an MRI. It's more about the symptoms and how that player reacts. And so sometimes something can get tweaked 3 or 4 days after the actual injury occurred. And so I don't think there's been any major setbacks. He said last night that he is optimistic that he'll return soon after his reevaluation on November 24th. And so that's good news for the Warriors.
Connor, how hard was he going and shooting around? I saw some videos of him taking some jumpers. Was he running, breaking up, burning a sweat, or was he kind of just standing around shooting at standstill locations?
He was moving around the court. You know, he was going pretty close to normal speed as far as his normal shoot around shooting routine. You know, and he was hitting a lot of those shots. He looked comfortable out there. I think he could play right now. I just think it's one of those situations where there's no need to. You might as well be careful. So they're going to give him a few days just to monitor and make 100% sure it's all good. But this isn't anything that anyone should be super worried about.
Connor, on Steph, you know, obviously the offense has struggled in his absence. And then whatever flare-up, whatever you want to make of this little fracas, it has also occurred in his absence. So just for you personally, what do you think, if you had to choose between one, Steph the basketball player and Steph the leader, the guy that serves the drink, the one who makes everybody, you know, kind of get along in harmony, which one do you think the Warriors miss more right now?
Wow, that's a good question. I think, well, the thing is that because he's on the road trip, even though he's not actually playing, he's still able to be that leader. You know, he might not be able to lead the fast break or orchestrate the offense, but he's still leading. You know, he's still, you know, in Draymond and KD's ear, he's still kind of playing peacemaker. And I think that is huge. I think the fact that he's on this road trip is really important. And so I think overall what they need more than anything is his presence, his calming, his energy, his joyful demeanor, just to kind of smooth the waters, because their biggest issue right now is bigger than basketball. You know, they need to work through that stuff before they can expect to play they want to play. So I would say overall they need Steph the leader, and luckily he's able to give them a lot of that when he's injured.
Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle joins us here on 95.7 The Game. We got the Warrior game tipping off at 4 o'clock. John Dickinson at 2:30 with Coach Keating going to take you up to tip off. But, Connor, you brought up the dilemma, the situation, the crisis, if you will, with KD and Dre. How much does Dre being out right now, is there any connection between him kind of taking some time off right now and this drama, or are they completely isolated? Because I'm seeing a narrative on Twitter that, hey, maybe they're floating Draymond Green in trade talks right now. Is that just completely ridiculous?
That is ridiculous. I do think it is completely isolated. He has been dealing with this toe injury for a week and a half, 2 weeks now, and he was dealing with it in L.A., if you remember in that Clippers game where the issue happened. He played 42 minutes, and he joked after the Houston game that he was actually glad he got suspended because it gave him some time to rest up against that, you know, when they were playing the Hawks. But, you know, you saw him in the Houston game, and he did not look himself, and I don't think it was just because of the awkwardness with KD. He had probably his worst game. You know, at least since he's become an all-star level guy, he had no points, 5 turnovers, looked completely out of it on both ends of the floor. And I think a lot of that was due to the injury. So they're just giving him some time to rest up. They're going to have a couple days off after this. So he should be ready to go for the OKC game on Wednesday.
And Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle, what exactly is his injury? Is it a broken toe, bruised toe, blister, turf toe? What exactly is the injury?
Sprained toe. He's got a sprained right toe.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm just curious. Now, any update on Boogie Cousins? Because I'm seeing him on the sidelines there, and man, he looks dapper. He looks like I don't know if it's Jodeci in the mid-90s or Master P on a yacht with the glasses and like the, you know, the coat and just the whole aura of him. I'm just screams 1990s hip hop. When's he coming back, man? I'm so pumped for him.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy that we have all these storylines and DeMarcus Cousins hasn't even played a game yet?
Oh, I know.
No, he's making really good progress. I think the biggest thing for him right now is just his conditioning. You know, he's been playing a lot of 3-on-3 with the guys after practice. Pretty much a full go in practice. Right now, it's just going to take a while for him to get where he needs to get, you know, conditioning-wise. I've noticed him, even when he's playing with the Jaren Collins and the Willie Greens of the world, he's getting out of breath pretty quickly. So I think it's going to still be a little while. I think Christmas is still pretty optimistic, but it's not out of the question for his return. But it shouldn't linger much further into January, I would guess.
Okay, now Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle, I got one important question to ask you. You're in San Antonio. Have you done the Riverwalk? And if so, are we going barbecue or Tex-Mex? Because this is very, very important for the people here in the Bay Area.
Yeah. I always stay at the Marriott River Center.
Okay.
The nice Marriott right there on the Riverwalk, which is awesome. And I love both Tex-Mex and barbecue. But
don't sit on the fence. Okay,
barbecue.
You're going with barbecue. What's your cut? You go brisket, pulled pork, links. Like, come on. I'm the butcher. Come on, give it to me. Ooh, ribs. All right. You like to get sloppy. I like it. I love it. Well, Connor, have fun. Enjoy it. I'm really interested to see these videos of Popovich and Kerr talking, because anytime those two are at a podium or in front of the microphones, they have something to say. And it's just always interesting. I love seeing the Warriors versus Spurs, because that's the model organization they've tried to emulate in many ways, but be even more flashy like the Lakers. So Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle, great stuff. Really appreciate it, buddy. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Of course, anytime, guys.
Thank you, buddy. Really appreciate that. And for you Warrior fans, even though it's an NFL Sunday, we are going to have John Dickinson and Kerry Keating, Coach Keating, at the bottom of the hour in about 19 minutes, and they're going to bring you right up until the tip, Warriors versus the Spurs here on 95.7 The Game. But on the other side, we're not going to go on the other side. We're just going to keep rolling. Oh, I guess I was wrong. Well, let's just keep rolling then. You know, I had a question. We've been talking a lot of football. We've clearly, you know, dissected this Warrior situation, and JD and Coach Keating, I'm really going to be interested to see Coach Keating's opinions on this whole thing. I'm curious, though, from the millennials behind the glass, are you guys interested this Friday, Tiger versus Phil?
Well, you know I'm not really the person to ask about this, because I'm not a golf guy, and I'm going to take this quick platform to say I'm a bowling guy, and I believe the PBA should get far more run than it does in the mainstream
media.
Okay,
stop it.
But that is just a side point.
I need you to do me a huge favor.
I need you to do me a huge favor over there, Tiger, okay? Because there's only one.
Hey, it's Tiger.
Tiger Woods, and I am ready for this Bleacher Report. Phil versus Tiger. James, are you in or out on Phil versus Tiger Friday, $19, on the Warner Network?
Hey, it's Tiger.
Are you in or out? I can't hear you, buddy. I guess you're out. No, he's in. All right. I have no clue, because this is the matchup most golf fans wanted to see 10 years ago.
Sorry, I'm a rook, but yes, I am excited. I will definitely drop $19 to see Tiger.
I think so, too. I mean, how many hundreds of dollars have you spent on Mayweather, on UFC, on just, like, boring fights that really, like, at least, like, on your phone, on the app? And this is pretty – what's interesting here is that the Warner Network has spent so much money. They got TNT. They got Bleacher Report. They got some affiliation with HBO. They've really dumped a ton of money into their digital content right now. And so this is one of their first big pushes. But what I wanted to see them do this, but have an undercard. And in the undercard, I wanted to see Steph Curry versus Tony Romo. I want that. Yes. I want that. You know, hey, we're on the sixth hole of Curry versus Romo. We're going to go back to the first tee, Tiger versus Phil. And I'm curious who the announcers are going to be. I need Charles Barkley there. Like, I need this to be way over the top. They said there's going to be no fans there. I mean, come on. Come on, TNT. You got tons of money. Come on, Warner Network. Figure this thing out. You know, figure this thing out. And because it's Friday, Black Friday, there's not a lot of other sports on. It's going to be like 3 o'clock, I think, on the West Coast, or maybe it's 4 o'clock on the West Coast. Kind of an odd time to start this, but I mean, it gets dark super early, so I guess it makes sense. It'll be prime time on the West, on the East Coast. Very interesting. Do the Warriors play on Friday?
Wait, before I get back to that really quick, you mentioned Charles specifically?
Yeah, Chuck.
Yeah. Chuck is going to be on broadcast with Ernie Johnson and Samuel L. Jackson for
Samuel
this Tiger Woods match.
L. Jackson? They couldn't get, you know, they have in all the commercials on the PGA channel. They got Carlton Banks, whatever his name is. Come on, what's his name? He's from Fresh Prince of Bel Air. You know,
Alfonso Ribeiro?
Thank you. They
yes.
usually have him, and he's like kind of like your, I don't know, he's like the token guy they use to, you know, pump people up. Like, oh, I know that guy. He's from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I need to see Justin Timberlake on this card.
All you got
to
do is hit the dance. All you got to do is hit the
Carlton.
And the crowd goes wild. I mean, to be fair, if I could be assured that Alfonso Ribeiro would hit the Carlton on the course at some point, I might drop some money for the match. Capital One's the match, by the way, if we're going properly branded.
I love it. Well, like, and this is where I kind of want to see them have fun with it. And I want to see, like, Lydia Ko, who's an LPGA star, go up against, like, Mark Mulder, who's a great golfer, right? And just absolutely destroy him to kind of shut up all the machismo guys out there. Like, the girls' game is not as good as the guys. The girls would destroy, the women would absolutely destroy the guys. Destroy them.
Well, I forget who it was the other night when we were talking when you first brought this up, but for an undercard, someone mentioned Michael Jordan and Bill Murray would be.
See, I like that.
Awesome.
See, I like that. That's intriguing. I followed Bill Murray out at Pebble Beach last year, and he's just funny. He's just funny. I'm just a huge Bill Murray fan, and he gets it, and he's great in front of the cameras. He's always ad-libbing. He's hilarious. So
I'm a little bit worried about how that might shake down, though, knowing how competitive Mike is and then knowing how Bill Murray likes to talk a little bit.
See, that's where
I get in with the cat. Because if MJ gets his concentration broken, it costs him something. We might see some hands around Bill Murray's throat, I'm feeling.
I think that's definitely an option. But again, as long as we're talking about this guy.
Hey, it's Tiger.
I'm all in. All right? I'm all in on Tiger Woods. Okay? I'm all in on Tiger Woods.
Is that all we're going to listen to of it today? You're not gonna run a little bit more?
Do we have? Here's my favorite. He left the voicemail.
I need to do me a huge favor.
You need to delete all the voicemails. You need to delete all of them.
I need to do me a huge favor.
Dude, there is nothing better than the two-minute ramblings of Tiger Woods off pills, talking to the Perkins waitress on the voicemail. It's just, it's this drop right here.
Hey, it's Tiger.
Forever famous. And I'm going to continue to use it every time we talk
about him. That's an RIP that you can blame right on the millennials. The disgraced celebrity voicemail is going in the toilet.
It is. Who leaves voicemails?
Alec Baldwin. Donald Sterling, Tiger, you know, that's just not going to happen anymore with this upcoming crop. You're going to get some, you know, ribald text messages or other things out there, but you will never get that sort of insane rambling voicemail access that you had.
Totally agree. All right, so let's get back to the Stephen A. question. I have a question for you guys. Do you guys truly believe that Stephen A. Smith would confront Kevin Durant in a locker room full of reporters? I just don't see it. I do not see him. He talks a big game from wherever they're in, New York, Connecticut, Bristol, but there's no way in heck he's going to go up to Kevin Durant and be like, I'm not taking that from you, and then ask some rebuttal question, right, guys? I mean, am I wrong? Seriously.
This is my take on Stephen A. He reminds me of, like, an older millennial where millennials sit behind keyboards and say what they want because they know nothing's going to happen to him. He just sits behind his desk and says what he wants because he knows at the end of the day he's not going to do anything, and neither is anyone else.
No. But I do feel like there was a heel turn on Kevin Durant. It wasn't the Oklahoma City thing. It really wasn't. I do think that his own disproportionate ego, emo, set trip thing that he's going on lately, ever since him and LeBron James were in the car with Kerry Champion doing that commercial, I swear, that was the moment in time I could pinpoint and I could say he lost touch with being himself and tried to chase the LeBron dream. And like, I got to be bigger than LeBron. I need to get the adoration that LeBron's getting, the appreciation, the attention. And he's getting all those things right now, and yet he's still miserable. Whereas LeBron, not only does he have the basketball brilliance and all that, everyone bowing to him at every moment, I mean, he's calling up James Jones, who is running the Phoenix Suns, and asking him to DFA Tyson Chandler, and he does that. How is that not tampering? Like, how is that not tampering? And while they're at it, someone called James Jones. Hey, I need Trevor Ariza on the Warriors this year. Can you pay him out, buy him out, so the Warriors can swoop him up?
Yeah, we don't have that kind of rapport with James Jones because you know for a fact James Jones would lay down his life for the King. The King got him everything he has in this league, and he knows it. I know there's sound. I don't know if I will have time to pull it up, but there is sound of James Jones in an interview where he comes out and says straight up, I owe that man my career, more or less. And I would stay indebted, too, if I was a bench three-point shooter who somehow lucked my way into a director of player personnel with the freaking Suns just because I happened to hitch my coattail to 23. Come on.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. I absolutely love that. Now, look, at the bottom of the hour.
Don't you dare move a muscle.
We got John Dickinson. We got Kerry Keating. We got Warriors pregame. The Warriors start at 4 o'clock tonight. We get the next episode, the next chapter of Popovich versus Kerr. I'm very interested to see just how the team bounces back from a quick turnaround from last night's game. You got a lot of older guys on this team when it comes to Iguodala, when it comes to Durant. He's 30 years old. I know Clay's still in his prime, per se, but he's got a lot of wear and tear on him as well. I'm ready to see what Livingston can give to them this evening. It's an interesting game. I need to see a step forward for Damian Jones. I told you guys earlier in the year. I was really impressed with him. I feel like he's kind of come back to the pack a little. It looks like there's going to be no Alphonso McKinney, JD was telling me in the break room earlier. So that's another big loss. I know he wasn't playing as well as he was. Maybe he's turning back into the pumpkin, and that's no shot at him. It's just, you know, he started off like gangbusters, and eventually he's going to regress back to the means. I've seen nothing from Jacob Evans at all year. I've seen really nothing from Jordan Bell. Like, Jordan Bell's been a big disappointment. I've really expected him to take a big leap forward, and I just haven't seen it. I don't see the ball skills. I don't see the smarts, the intelligence when it comes to switching and communicating on defense. He just looks lost at times out there. Really liked what I saw from Damian Lee, but it's a tough, tall order to ask this guy who just got here to come in and, hey, give me 20 minutes and score another 15 points. Like, that's... I don't think that that's likely tonight. I need to see a big game from Quinn Cook. There's going to be no Pau Gasol for the San Antonio Spurs. I'm very interested to see DeMar DeRozan in San Antonio. He's a guy who I like his game. I never thought he was one of the, you know, elite players, but he's an upper echelon type player. I think he's a good fit with Popovich. But they lost Danny Green, who I really liked, and he really was a Warrior gnat. He was a guy that really got under the Warriors' skin, hit big shots against the Warriors. Not that he's anything special. He's just really good. Just a really good player against us for some reason, but they don't have him, no Kawhi. I really like Toronto. I know they gagged that game away against the Celtics the other night, but I really like Toronto. I really liked them. I like that matchup, Toronto versus Boston. Sign me up for 7 more of those games.
Like, you know, Warriors are actually responsible for this current landscape, because Kawhi would not have left. He would not be anywhere else besides San Antonio right now if not for the foot of Zaza Pachulia.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. I just kept tripping off, like, this guy literally sat out on Popovich and basically iced his way out of town. It's kind of crazy. It really is kind of crazy. And I'm watching Gordon Hayward for the Boston Celtics. He doesn't look right. Something is up. It's not just psychologically. It's physically as well. He doesn't look right. I don't know what's going on with them, but Kyrie, you know, I know Warrior fans don't want to admit this out loud. Kyrie is a baller. He's an absolute baller. And there's a handful of guys that I would take with the ball in their hands in the final minute, and he's in that list. And I'll put Steph in that list. I'll even put KD in that list. Kawhi, I'd throw in that list now. Kawhi's just such a... He's just so physically strong. He gets to any spot on the court that he wants, and then he can lock you down on the other side. He's just a beast. Man, he's a special player. Kyrie is a special player. And with a minute to go in that game, Toronto gagged that thing away, and he stepped up. I mean, he's just such a great ISO player, such a great finisher. He got great touch. He's so good. He's just really, 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 really good. I don't know that Warrior fans have enough appreciation for how good he is. I think we dismiss him way too quickly. I feared him, as great as LeBron is, and this is taking nothing away from him, I feared Kyrie significantly more in the final minutes of every game we played against the Cleveland Cavaliers than I did LeBron. And that's no knock on LeBron. It's just Kyrie's that good of a finisher.
Who hit the three to win it?
I know.
Who did that to us?
That was Kyrie. It was the only bucket made in the last two whatever minutes of that game. I mean, both teams were completely spent, gassed out. I'll never forget that Steph Curry around the back pass out of bounds. My dad, and it was Father's Day. I had the whole family at the house. Oh, my gosh.
Well, this is a common knock, especially when Kyrie begged his way out of Cleveland. Oh, you know, you're not LeBron, you know. So what, you're not LeBron? Yeah, nobody's LeBron. You cracked the code.
Exactly.
Way to go.
I know.
He's an incredible player in his own right, and he very much deserves, if that's what he chooses to do, to be the franchise somewhere else.
Yeah, sports,
and so he did. Just because he's not LeBron James, my God, he's a top five player in this league.
Sports fans can be very simple-minded, and it's very frustrating because nuance doesn't go over well with them. And I feel like... there was a long time argument here in the Bay Area. Steve Young will never be Joe Montana. Oh, he'll never be the greatest quarterback of all time. Wow. Newsflash. And then, of course, years later, it would be Jeff Garcia. He'll never be Steve and Joe. It's like, yeah, but can you appreciate how good he is right now? Like, I feel like we have no perspective, no nuance. Like, I'm looking at Derek Carr, and I know a lot of people don't like Derek Carr. They're 14-14 right now in the second quarter with about 2 minutes to go. But Derek Carr, just take a step back. And I know they have no talent around him. He's looked awful. He's regressed. All those things. All of his numbers last year in a down year would have been the best quarterback season by a 49er quarterback had he been that since Jeff Garcia left. 25-plus touchdowns, you know, 4,000 yards. Like, all of those numbers would have been 49er highs. And I get it through the lens of wanting them to go back to the playoffs. Oh, Derek Carr's no good. He's not bad. He's not that bad. Look at what the 49ers are trotting out there. If you want to see bad quarterback play, look at what some of these teams. Let's watch Colt McCoy next week after a whole week of teams getting ready to prepare for him. We'll see how the Redskins look.
The Nathan Peterman Express got a workout with the Detroit Lions.
How? Who? What is Matt Patricia? What are you watching? What are you watching? Who's the guy they signed? Was it Derek Anderson? Who's the guy they signed and scored five touchdowns? In
Matt Barkley.
Matt Barkley went off.
It was against the New York Jets. What do you want? What do you want?
The Jets. That's another thing. Like I like their coach. He's gone. If you can't elevate the quarterback in today's NFL, you're gone. Unless you have a championship level quarterback who's already ready and established, all of the coaches need to be offensive minded. And that's why I'm looking at this Cleveland Browns situation with Baker Mayfield. And I'm going, Condoleezza Rice. Are you kidding me? Condoleezza Rice. Come on. Really?
Well, I mean, it should be noted that there has been a specific statement released by the Browns saying that they have not considered Condoleezza Rice to this point. But the fact
they haven't considered
the best, because name any other NFL team that rumor could come out and you could be like, wow, I guess they really are thinking about it. Nobody else.
The Seattle Seahawks are contemplating Dick Cheney to replace Pete Carroll. Like, hey, how dumb are we?
I heard Colin Powell designs a mean 3-4.
Oh, that's brilliant. We had a quick butcher shop today. We talked a little Warriors. We talked some Niners. We got John Dickinson and Coach Keating coming into the studio here at 95.7 The Game. They're going to get you ready for the Warriors game against the San Antonio Spurs. Tip-off is at 4 o'clock. I'm sure JD is going to have tons of information on the Dubs. So check in. Stay tuned. 95.7 The Game. Thanks for joining us on a football Saturday. I'm out.